creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Dharmas are boundless. I vow to embody them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to receive it. Now we call those the four great vows. And these vows that we do, the four great vows, are our commitment to live the life of a bodhisattva. And a bodhisattva is one who lives their life for all beings, which means that, you know, we don't just come here for ourselves, our own satisfaction, our own happiness, our own well-being. We come here for ourselves and for all beings, for all others. So I'm going to talk a little bit about creations are numberless and I vow to free them. Before that, I want to read a couple of lines by the poet Ikkyu. And he says, "Everyday priests minutely examine the law and endlessly chant complicated sutras. Before doing that, though, they should learn how to read the love letters sent by the wind and the rain, the snow and the moon." Every day, priests minutely examine the law and endlessly chant complicated sutras. Before doing that, though, they should learn how to read the love letters sent by the wind and rain, the snow and the moon. So what do you think those words mean? So what Ikkyu is talking about is, if you think about it, everyday priests minutely examine the law and endlessly chant complicated sutras. Okay, so that's literally doing the sutras, confirming themselves to chant these sutras and become aware of all the minutiae of the sutras and endlessly dedicated to chanting them. But Ikkyu is saying that that's not enough. We have to embody the heart of the sutra. We have to make it ourselves. So it's not enough to just come here and chant. It's not enough to just come here and chant these bodhisattva vows. We're really asked to embody them, to make a 100% commitment to each one of them. So in a sense, that old line, though I don't remember who said it is, don't confuse the finger pointing at the moon with the moon itself, right? So the sutras, chanted literally, are the finger, right? I'm not getting rid of that part. We need a finger to point, right? So it's the finger pointing at the moon. But the moon itself is the heart of the chant. It's the heart of the chant that we embody. So creations are numberless, and I vow to free them. And in Buddhism, this is the ideal practice, right? It's, like I said, to become a bodhisattva. That's one who strives to liberate all beings from suffering. And these vows, which are known, of course, as the bodhisattva vows, are taken formally to do just that. Right? It's like I said. Vows are also considered an expression of bodhicitta, or the desire to realize oneself for the sake of others. And most of you are aware that Kuan Yin, referred to as the bodhisattva of compassion, represents this ideal. So again, I can't stress this enough. You know, we don't just come to the Zendo for ourselves. That's only part of it. We come to the Zendo to practice, to open ourselves to the service of all beings. So what we do is we empty ourselves of our own delusions so that we do not create more suffering. If we're serving others, we don't want to live a life that creates suffering for others. So we want to eliminate the delusion that we have, if we have it still, that things are separate. Because if we function from a place of separation, what happens? We create more karma that leads to more suffering. And an example of that would be, if I live on a river and I feel separate from those who live downstream, I will have no inhibition from dumping my wastes and pesticides into the river and causing suffering for my fellow beings downstream, instead of freeing them from suffering or doing the best that I can do to free them from suffering, I am creating more suffering. And that's because of the delusion I have. Then the delusion is, those people down there are not me. Who cares? I'm just taking care of myself, man. Just me. But as we practice and we go deeper into our practice, that delusion drops away. And we realize those people down there are not those people down there. They're you and me. They're us. They were all one body of people. So this commitment, you may get a sense of as I'm talking about this, this commitment is larger than our everyday minds can comprehend. So how do we keep this vow? Well, we keep it moment by moment, doing the best we can. Right? You don't start out being perfect at this. We probably never get perfect at it. But it's the commitment to do the best we can, and in the process, letting go of an idea that we may have that it's impossible. How can we do this? And this idea is restrictive by nature, all right? So we have to let go of this idea. You know, if we said, oh my God, how is this an ideal? I could never accomplish this. But if we do the best we can, we may be of service to others in little bits and pieces every day. You know, there's no guarantee about this. We may do acts of kindness, help others, but you know, we never know, or we don't always know, the outcome. So we don't want to act from a place of compassion with the idea in the back of our minds. We will see the outcome of that act of compassion. And that's actually pretty self-centered, right? Because then we get confused, you know. We're not really practicing for others. We're practicing to make ourselves feel good because we were compassionate. And like I said, most of the time, we really don't know the outcome of our compassion. And I've used this example before, but if I'm walking down the street and I encounter a homeless person asking for money. So here I am. I'm offered this situation. So how do I deal with this situation? So I could stop and say hello. Ask this person a little bit about who they are. Ask them, do you need money? Cup, you need money. And, you know, if they say, yeah. And so you can put money in that cup. So that's an act of compassion. But we don't know the outcome. We don't know if that person is going to take the money they get and go and buy drugs. Or on the other hand, maybe they take the money they get to buy food. We don't know what the outcome will be. So, you know, we're just doing our best in that moment, what we think is best. And then there's another gift that we give. We give the gift of paying attention to a person who is ignored in society, just walked by. Most people are not even conscious almost of their existence, other than they want to avoid any type of encounter, uncomfortableness, that fear. And that uncomfortableness and that fear, again, perpetuate the separation that we feel from others. So there are no guarantees that our acts of compassion will fulfill our bodhisattva vow. Unless we realize that in making this commitment to this vow, it's a commitment to do the best we can. And one of the things that we do to help us fulfill this commitment clearly is we do zazen. And we do it as faithfully and as often as is possible in the context of our lives. Because zazen helps us see the world through eyes of non-separation. And allows us to act in ways that are more compassionate because of that non-separation. So finally, we must be careful of the language that we use. I must be careful of the language that I use in giving this talk. I vow to free them. Or I could say, I vow to free them. And if I think and say, I vow to free them, that's not an expression of my feeling connected, feeling the one body. It's I'm helping those people over there. So it's helpful to look at the way that we talk about these things. And that's why the words that I read to you earlier are so important. It's not enough just to take in this vow think about this vow, but we must embody it. We must bring it to life in ourselves. So the love letters from the wind and rain, the snow and the moon, will help us remember that we are the numberless creations. Thanks.